Welcome to Holden Village. Today is Tuesday, July 6th, 1999. In the fireside room this evening is our presenter, Bradley Hansen. Today's session number is 99-1, and it is titled Lutheran Spirituality 1, Spirituality Today. Let's listen in to Bradley's presentation.
Partly my way of getting into the topic there is to reflect a little bit about how the term spirituality has become so popular in the last 25 years. I mean, why should that be? It's a term that, you know, has been used somewhat previously, but not really to a great extent, but it's in the last 25 years. It's just sort of mushroomed, and you see references to it all over the place. They even have PhD programs in spirituality now. I'll come around a little later to talk about my understanding of what we mean by the word spirituality. There is no universally accepted definition of that term. But maybe just to begin with, there is something I think that isn't just temporary about this interest in spirituality. I think there's something that's deep within us human beings with which it connects. And that is that we are spiritual beings, that we are on a spiritual journey, you know. And, well, what does it mean to be a spiritual being? And what I'm referring to here when I use the word spiritual here, what I'm calling to mind really is the our ability as human beings to be able to step back from our own life and situation and reflect on it. And that it's the power of transcendence, to be able to transcend our immediate circumstances and to reflect on it. And when we do that, then it impels us to ask questions about the meaning and the direction of our life, you see. And I think that in Christians regard this as something that's not just a pure accident, but that it's God-given. So, for instance, St. Augustine said a long time ago, at the beginning of his Confessions, in a prayer to God, says, you have made us for yourself, and we are restless until we find our rest in you. And so I think that's true, that there is something about us as human beings that we are kind of made for God, and that there is this sort of restlessness that we may not name it God, we may not call it God, but I think that at least that's a Christian interpretation of the human, part of the Christian interpretation of the human situation. And so that's a God-given kind of bent or drive or hunger within us, I think. And that's part of what underlies this interest in spirituality. Spirituality, in a sense, is a fad, but it connects with something that is deeply and perennially human. What I'd like to talk about then today is this perennial human quest is taking place in a cultural context, I think, which was different. It's new. And what I'd like to do is just characterize some of the features. I'm going to identify three features of this cultural context, which I think are particularly significant. One is that increased social pluralism. That is to say that it's not that the world so much has gotten more variety, perhaps, than it had, say, 1,000 years ago or 100 years ago. It's just that variety, people of those different varieties are living a lot closer to one another. We're much more aware of one another. Not very long ago, most people who were Hindus lived over in India, but now, you know, you can have those folks as next door neighbors or co-workers. And this has an immense effect upon us human beings, because our social context has a lot to do with what we accept as plausible, what we accept as believable, credible. I mean, just an example. Last night at At Vespers, wasn't it, that we had the consideration of taking the pledge of nonviolence? Okay, now, what would be the chances of your encountering that pledge in your home congregation? I suspect that the odds are not very high. In this social context, the consideration of taking a pledge of nonviolence seems reasonable, plausible. You know, lots of folks around us who advocate that point of view, you see? And so for us, you know, as individuals coming into, that's something I really need to seriously consider. Now, you see, when we have a variety of different religious perspectives close around us, there's much more uncertainty about what is true and what is good, see? Along with that has come, I think, greater individual autonomy. Now, we Americans, if we are all Americans, and it's probably to some extent less true, I guess, of Canadians, but those of you who are Americans, individualism is a very strong tradition for us. But I think it's not that we've even had a greater emphasis upon autonomy, I think, individual autonomy. And it's not that people now are braver, you know, somehow. I think it's a result of this first factor, the increased social pluralism. It's something that's been forced upon us. Because we have to make many more choices now. We have to make them. And so I think a third feature coming out of this is more elective ties to religious institutions. But as I recall, there was this a poll done back in the 50s that indicated that I think it was only about 4%, it was under 10% of people in America who had switched denominations. You know, that whatever they kind of had grown up in, if they'd grown up Methodist, they were Methodist. You know, if they were Lutheran, they were Lutheran. By about 1986, it was over 30% people who had switched denominations. If you did it today, I suspect it'd be considerably higher. Now, that people feel less inclined simply to go along with what they grew up with, and so their willingness to choose religious institutions in one way or another, or not to affiliate with a religious institution at all. And so it seems to me that you could maybe chart a kind of spectrum of ways that folks relate to religious institutions. And I'm going to kind of divide it into four groupings. And human beings, of course, never fall into such neat categories. But they represent sort of points on a spectrum. You could talk about perhaps loyal members. These are people who are, they may gripe and have objections to this or that feature of their religious institution, let's say a church. But on the whole, they're very much committed to it. They feel at home here. They're the kind of solid, dedicated folks that kind of keep many religious institutions going, right? But then you have folks that are loving critics whose objections to the religious institution with which they affiliate are much deeper. But, by golly, you know, they still affiliate. So, I mean, you can find Roman Catholics like this who are, you know, profoundly object to the sexism and the hierarchical character of the church, and yet, by golly, you know, I'm still a Catholic, you see. And so you still identify with that. And you can find this, I think, with charismatic Lutherans, some charismatic Lutherans, who, again, would perhaps like the church to be this, that, or the other thing, Lutheran churches, and perhaps they find that some of those needs fulfilled in other ways, through other groups. But they have still made the decision, yes, I will still be a Lutheran, you see. Even though they have some of these needs that are not met by the Lutheran church, and perhaps, you know, are trying to make a change in various ways, but they still stay Lutheran, okay? So they're the loving critics. Thirdly, I would say maybe we could talk about spiritual shoppers. That this is more of a kind of, almost a kind of market view of churches, that churches provide a service, and so I seek to find the services which will meet my personal needs. And so people will identify with the church, let's say, to the extent that, and as long as it continues to meet their personal needs. But if they move to a different town and there isn't one of those churches that's convenient, they could join a different church tradition and not feel any great sense of loss. See? So it's more a matter of is this institution that's my granddaughter, and she calls me Baba. She can't quite say grandpa yet. Hi, Sophie. And there are many folks who are spiritual shoppers. And then I would say maybe a fourth would be, a fourth kind of grouping would be independent seekers. These are folks who really don't affiliate with, or in any kind of enduring way or significant way with religious institutions. They may kind of join in here or there, touch base here or there, but on the whole, they are on a kind of personal journey. And they're seeking to kind of work out their own personal faith synthesis, you might say. And they perhaps are quite eclectic in drawing from lots of different sources, you see. Now, let's say there's not just four categories, but you can maybe get a sense of kind of a spectrum here that I'm trying to identify this way. Maybe just a couple of qualifications here is that a person doesn't necessarily stay in one of these orientations towards religious institutions forever. You can go through, I mean, one could begin as a loyal member, become disillusioned, and become an independent seeker, and kind of go as a spiritual shopper and end up as a loving critic. Or you could start out as an independent seeker, you see, and you could end up as a loyal member. Who knows, you see? So it isn't that one is stuck in a certain place, in a certain kind of orientation towards religious institutions. Secondly, maybe another qualification is that we shouldn't think that loyal members are kind of just dullards who don't think very hard and are just caught in a rut, whereas the independent seekers are these great Socratic characters, you know, who are really deeply searching. You can find, you know, depth of thought and really courageous living all along here. So we shouldn't kind of pigeonhole folks into saying, you know, kind of identifying one as being kind of really thoughtful and courageous and another as being not. Well, maybe those are just a couple of, and of course another qualification might be that, well, you might not find yourself any of these, you may find yourself kind of sort of somewhere between. Okay. So, I think that this is characterized as something about our current cultural situation, and I think it affects then the popularity of the term spirituality. This is where, for those who came in a little bit late, this is where I started out in some ways. Why is it that this term spirituality in the last 25 years has become so popular? Why is it used so much? And I think it has a lot to do with this. Is one of the ways it gets used is it's not uncommon to run into people who say, well, I'm not religious, but I'm very spiritual. Okay? Now, those are folks kind of down at this end of the spectrum, you see. Because for them, religious or religion is identified with belonging to a certain kind of religious institution, which in their eyes tends to be kind of lifeless, you know, constrictive. So there's a lot of negativity associated with religion when it's used in that way. Whereas spirituality tends to be used, oh, that's really personal, that's kind of lived reality, you know. That's authentic. So that's part of it, I think. there's another factor here that I'd like to connect up with in this talk about our cultural situation. There's an interesting book that was produced, came out last fall by a Princeton sociologist of religion by the name of Robert Wuthnow. Title of it is After Heaven, and its subtitle is Spirituality in America since the 1950s. Very interesting book. Anyway, he talks about, he characterizes two kinds of spirituality. One, which is the spirituality of dwelling, where it's very much kind of matter of belonging to a very stable community, you know. On the other hand, there's a spirituality of seeking, which is kind of like going out and breaking new ground and seeking new things, you see. He says, well, the 1950s was a period of, in which we emphasized spirituality as dwelling. But the 60s, 70s, and 80s, and on up into the 90s, we've been having a lot of the spirituality of seeking. And he says, one of the results, though, of this has been that, in his mind anyway, and I think probably rightly, that it's there's a fair bit of spiritual dabbling, you might say, that's been going on. In other words, kind of, well, for instance, my wife Marion went to the retreat center in central Iowa and ran into a woman there. They got in conversation, and so came up with what was this women's own kind of faith, and she said, "Oh, my husband and I are into Indian spirituality, Native American spirituality." And are you a part of any kind of any community? Oh no, we have a couple of books on this, you see, and we read about it. Well, you see that it. Indian spirituality is a real tough thing to get into in very great depth. And having a couple books, you get a kind of taste of it, you see. There's some things that you can kind of perhaps draw into your own life. But in fact, I read not too long ago, about an Indian woman who was objecting to, can't remember the term she used, but she called it kind of spiritual piratism, of kind of stealing our spiritual traditions, you know, by people coming in and picking off elements. Well, what Wuthnow suggests is that perhaps now is the time for what he calls the spirituality of practice, by which he means that there is a need for, yes, an emphasis upon spiritual practices, but having those spiritual practices rooted in and being connected with a living community that has, you know, strong traditions. And that then you have a kind of combination of this dwelling, you see, and seeking. There is a connection with a tradition and people who are steeped in that tradition. On the other hand, to have a kind of openness to a flexibility and some variety in spiritual practices. And that's kind of what I'm suggesting I think the Lutheran tradition fits that really very nicely. Because the Lutheran tradition is one which has very profound commitments to certain core teachings, certain core convictions, along with respect, but also kind of freedom towards a variety of religious practices. And so I think that in this cultural situation right now, that Lutheran spirituality is one that is, you might say, kind of well positioned in many ways to speak to some of the needs of people. Maybe what I'll do then is just is just give you a little treatment of what I mean by the word spirituality. As I say, there's no universally accepted definition of spirituality, but and there isn't just spirituality. Spirituality is always specific, just as religion is. It's always concrete. So that's why I would say a spirituality, I think, is a faith plus a path, by which I suggest that by faith, I suggest that there's a kind of perspective there, a view of life, but more than just a kind of set of ideas, there's also a commitment to that way of life. And along with that, there is a path, and there's certain practices which express that faith and also nurture that faith. And, what I'm going to do in this series on Lutheran spirituality is to talk about some of those elements of that Lutheran faith and some of the practices, I think, that have been central to that tradition. And one of the reasons why I think that the Lutheran tradition is well positioned to provide a strong tradition with core convictions and yet freedom towards a variety of religious practices has to do with perhaps its being a kind of mediating church in many ways, a middle ground church in many ways. What I'm going to do here is just do a very quick little sketch of various church traditions. And here we have the Orthodox tradition, Roman Catholic tradition, which had a kind of formal division back in the 11th century. Then in the 16th century, we have coming up here the Protestant Reformation. And here you have the Anglican Episcopal tradition, Lutheran tradition, the Reformed or Presbyterian tradition, here you have what you might call various free churches, such as Baptist, and then maybe lastly sometimes they're called kind of radical Protestants, and that's not in the sense that they're doing anything wild, but just that perhaps their ways of doing things are quite different. They're radical in that sense. And all of this is kind of this Protestant variety. Now, the Lutherans are kind of in the middle of all this, you see. But if you're wondering about the Methodists, they sort of come off here in the 18th century. But the Lutherans are kind of in the middle of all this. So that the Lutherans and the Anglicans, for example, share a good deal of Roman Catholic practices. And yet, on the other hand, they also share a lot in common with other Protestant churches, as we'll see. And so there is a sense of being rooted in a tradition here. There's a which is quite solid, which carries on back. I think, you know, connects very deeply. Many Lutherans have very close ties, a sense of identity with Roman Catholic tradition, because we share so much in common, you see. And yet there's also a sense of kind of commonality with many Protestants as well. Well, anyway, what I've done is to, maybe just to recap here, is talk about spirituality in our present social situation, marked by these three characteristics of different ways, four different ways of on a spectrum here of how people respond to this and affiliate to religious institutions, and then suggesting that it's in this kind of situation, I think, that there's been so much interest in talk and writing about spirituality, because it has kind of fit this cultural situation and the needs of people. What I'm going to do now is to ask you to reflect on several things. All right. I'll give you a couple of minutes to do this, and then I'll ask you just to gather in small groups and kind of share your reflections. All right. I'll put the questions up here so you can. First question is, how would you characterize yourself now? That is to say, as loyal member, you know, et cetera, et cetera, independent seeker. Okay. Where are you now? How would you characterize yourself in this way at other stages of your life? Most of us go through some kind of journey here relating to religious institutions in various ways. And then thirdly, how do you feel about where you are now? That is to say, do you feel kind of at home? Do you feel contented? Do you feel, I don't know, I'm still kind of looking, still searching, kind of discontent. I feel separated, you know, kind of distant. How do you feel about where you are now, you see? And is there some sort of call that's coming to you in that sense of where you are now? Is there a call that comes through those feelings associated with where you are now? So I'll give you, are all those questions clear enough? Just give you a few minutes to reflect on those alone, kind of sort that out in your own mind, and then ask you to take some time and share it together in groups. Is that enough time for you? Kind of sort things out? Okay. I just invite you then to form groups of three or four, whatever is kind of convenient, and just kind of share whatever you feel comfortable sharing out of that, and then we'll have some time together where you can bring questions. Okay, could we come back together again? Let's just see if you have any comments or questions you'd like us to talk about.
Well, if I may, your point earlier about spirituality from a Lutheran point of view may have a great gift in this particular time. Because of this, we have a kind of a central core, but on the other hand, at the same time, there's a freedom and a grace about that that mm-hmm. leads us likewise to be open to others.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a very exciting point you make, and it would be, we were kind of reflecting a little bit on that in our different.
I see.
From our different points of view about that, and Lutheranism being this kind of dialectical mm-hmm. faith that holds things in tension and enjoys the tension.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. But anyway, I think that given the popularity of spirituality, given the context of the age of seekers and shoppers and New Age and all of this, I think that's a pretty important piece for us Lutherans to a gift that we have in the mix, and not water ourselves down, but on the other hand, not lose sight of the fact that this is good.
Yeah.
This is a good gift in the mix.
Good.
So I think we were wanting to explore that a little bit.
Sure.
At some point.
Maybe just a couple of comments there. One is that I think Lutherans, just like all these others, are really family. It's a family. And a family doesn't, the members of a family are not identical, you know, but they have resemblances to one another. And similarly, I think with Lutheran, there's a considerable diversity within this Lutheran family. So to talk about just about Lutheran spirituality, though there, you know, kind of there's one mold that everybody has to kind of fit, is misleading too, because there is, I think there's considerable diversity there. In African-American Lutherans going to have different kind of flavor, the kind of music they do and the way they do liturgy and all that is over against those of us who come out of a kind of Northern European background. So, and you could go on from there. Charismatic Lutherans, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So I think there's considerable diversity there, but that would be true of the other traditions as well. A second comment there might be that, well, we Lutherans, those of us who are Lutherans maybe are somewhat inclined to be skeptical about the whole subject of spirituality. But yesterday, or it was Saturday, I was visiting with someone over there in the village square there, and they asked what I was going to be teaching Lutheran spirituality. Oh, well, gee, you'll have to first prove there is such a thing. And, I mean, that's a very common comment that you hear from Lutherans. Oh, that's an oxymoron, isn't it? Spirituality. So, I mean, there's a certain kind of, and for others, there are a considerable number of Lutherans who say, oh, that's terrible stuff. You know, talk about that. So, we're not the so terribly well positioned, you know, we're a little bit skeptical about it. But I think that if you can come at it from that point of view and see it as a strength. Yeah. Well, let's see if there's any other kind of responses to that comment or any other observations or.
Well, that's you're not leading us down the path to say that we're totally gray.
No. I think what makes this an identifiable family is an ongoing conversation with the tradition. And ours is a tradition which is a confessional tradition. So there's a kind of theological set of teachings that is there. In that respect, we're very much like the Roman Catholics, who take doctrine very seriously. You see. And yet, you know, like Catholics too, we have sort of go out off the deep end sometimes with that. But I think it's that conversation with that tradition as we go through time and as you encounter various kind of movements and new situations, that's what maintains an identity to this family. But when someone no longer wants to engage in that conversation, then, you know, then that's maybe a marker in which that person is saying, well, not, you know, I really don't care to be a part of that family anymore. And we, of course, we have family arguments about what the implications of that tradition are. Yeah?
In a couple discussions today, we talked kind of about being born and brought up in a Lutheran home and church, et cetera, that, you know, the word of faith journey or spiritualism or whatever was really not there. You know, you sort of were sprinkled in your baptism with all this Lutheran and the doctrine all sort of came into you and by osmosis, and somehow you weren't sort of encouraged to change. Kind of spiritual growth was okay, and you used your faith as you went through normal human growth and development. But, you know, there wasn't really, it seems like a much more recent thing, this concept of a faith journey or spiritualism, some individual, like you said, motion in some direction.
Well, and I suppose that's true. I mean, actually, the whole business about baptism, you see, can be very profound spiritual practice. I mean, the fact that we here have, at the center have the baptismal font, and to go in there and dip your hand in the water and make the sign of the cross and remember. I mean, I like to do that. It's kind of a very visible way, tangible way of being able to remind oneself of that. Kind of daily practice of living that Christ-like life, of dying and rising with Christ. So, I mean, we've got some stuff there to work with that's really great stuff. But we, you know, we don't always work with it.
Sure.
Just like any other tradition, I don't know if we're any better or worse.
Well, it seems like that... To identify what a Lutheran spirituality is, one has to know what a Lutheran is, and obviously one has to have a definition of spirituality, as you're pointing out. And it would seem as if part of the interest within the Lutheran, and I'm just reflecting here now, based on some things, but that 25 years maybe. We have moved much more into this baptismal, theological orientation piece.
Yeah, we've recovered that part of our tradition, yeah.
Which then becomes, I think, getting closer and closer to our what Lutheranism is, this notion of pushing us back into our idea of grace and unconditional grace, which is at the very, very heart and soul of that theological movement. Whereas when I grew up in our confirmation years, I don't think we talked about baptism very much except as one of the sacraments. I mean, it was just a rite, and this was an important rite by, but mostly our spiritual, Lutheran to me was this embodied corpus of material that one was supposed to have. And so that would, so I think this Lutheran spirituality has been this dynamic growth in the last 20 years, at least in my memory.
And one of the real positive things there is too is that I think many more individuals, I mean, are really seeking to look for kind of some depths within their own or other religious traditions, and not content with just going through the motions, you might say, but wanting to kind of go deeper into their own into that tradition and deepen their faith.
As I thought about this is quite apart from our conversation. In our conversation, we all three of us oscillated back and forth between loyal members,
loyal members,
and loving critics. So we were pretty boring on that. We were an independent
Student. It
does seem to me that that any attempt to sort of develop a Lutheran spirituality is, in some respects, an uphill climb for Lutherans because. On the one hand, we've got, forgive me now for those of you that aren't theologians, but you know, we've got this notion in the Lutheran tradition that your sanctification is coincidental with your justification, that there's nothing you have to do to make yourself right with God. You're completely justified and you're completely sanctified at the day of, the, of your baptism. You celebrate that every day.
No, you're not completely sanctified, I don't think.
Oh, well, that's how I was taught.
Oh, okay, then you were taught wrong.
You can tell Gerhard that it's okay. In Luther.
Yeah, Luther.
I prefer you did, actually. But, you know, the point is that the Luther and the Reformers were operating so much over and against the Roman Catholic sort of developmental notion of grace, and so that Lutherans really did sort of emphasize, no, it's not that, it's this, and it's pretty much completed. So they get that, and then on the other hand, you also have our Lutheran emphasis on the two kingdoms, and especially the priesthood of all believers, and the notion of each person having a vocation, and that you live out your vocation in your daily life, and so your spirituality is very much related directly to your daily life.
Sure.
And that sounds great, but I mean, I live a daily life, and I wouldn't necessarily call it spiritually. See what I'm saying? Right. So I think a lot of folks. I mean, this might be delightful if that's where you're leading us.
Oh, yeah. I think it's part of the picture, sure.
But I think for a lot of us, what the world defines as spirituality is not necessarily a lot of Lutherans' experience of our daily lives.
And what the world defines as spirituality tends to be certain kind of religious practices?
Well, maybe, or this, you know, this sort of contemplative model where to be spiritual is to be engaged in prayer, you know, at least an hour a day, and maybe you rise and, you know, say matins and say confirmation.
And that's a certain
what it means to be a spiritual.
Yeah. Rather than my response to you, anybody else like to respond to Jim about that?
It's good.
Get a little dialogue with you.
Well, I would just say, of course, it's hard to define these things, but if spirituality is important, if we come to the conclusion that that's needed in religion, and if there's a great searching out there, be it fad or something that may last a while longer, to me the big question is, can these people find it in church? Or can you be a loyal member and go every Sunday your whole life and have to search elsewhere for spirituality?
Yeah.
Well, again, it all depends on what you mean. I mean, what you mean by spirituality. If indeed it is, I mean, I think it's not that one has to look for spirituality in many cases. I think a person already has quite often a spirituality insofar as one has a faith, a functioning faith, which, and perhaps some, and then some practices, some ways that faith is fed, nurtured, but also expressed. What happens is quite often is that we've tended to identify the term spirituality with just this part of it, it seems to me. And certain practices, certain religious practices, and frankly, this has happened now. There's this last November or December it was, a Lutheran Theological Southern Seminary in South Carolina came out with a document with the title Spirituality and Spiritual Formation. Now, an important document. This is the first, that I know of anyway, the first such intentional attention to the whole subject of spirituality by a Lutheran seminary. I mean, they, you know, they've done things, they've had some various forms or practices that they've encouraged, but this Southern Seminary they have called a person to be their director kind of this spiritual formation program. This document was a kind of theological statement, underpinnings for attention, giving a kind of affirmative attitude towards spiritual formation. But in the document itself, when they talk about spirituality talk is acquainted with path, seems to me, certain spiritual practices, you see. And it seems to me then that it becomes something a little too narrow. And if you get outside of that,
But that's the way most of, when I do retreats with Lutheran pastors, that's the way most of them talk about it. And that's why they raise the question, really, is there a Lutheran spirituality? Are there certain distinctive spiritual practices that mark Lutherans off from being Lutherans? And I don't think there are. I don't think there are. And actually, this document from Southern Seminary says that as well. That all the practices we have are really ecumenical practices. Mm. We're not like the Jesuits, for example, who have the spiritual exercises that mark them off, you know, from other traditions. Yes, you wanted to.
And I was in confirmation and studied my catechism the first time a very long time ago. But I like to think of spirituality as an awareness of God's presence all the time. Mm-hmm. And when I did have confirmation instruction, I never learned about Martin Luther's mm-hmm. suggestion that upon rising, we mm-hmm. sign ourselves
yeah.
with the sign of the cross to recall our baptism. And even his morning and evening prayer, and again, mm-hmm. crossing ourselves. That, I didn't know about that until a few years ago. Mm-hmm. That is a path, isn't it?
Sure.
That's a practice mm-hmm. that I wasn't aware of as a Lutheran.
Mm-hmm. Well, in fact, when you talk about, see, that you understand your spirituality as an awareness of God's presence, that's really a contemplative way of doing that path. But there's lots of different practices that can nurture that contemplative awareness. Simple things like simply waking up in the morning, you know, and crossing yourself or praying. Again, being mindful right away when you start out of God's presence.
And in my Lutheran church, the pastor had led us in the study of Divinio Lectio.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
We were going to look at this for 3 weeks, but it went on for 4 months. Because people wanted it so much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we'll be doing some of that in this, I think maybe the end of this week, Saturday, I believe. We'll be doing that, I think. That's
right.
Yeah, lectio divino. Yeah, kind of. It's a form of meditative prayer, really. We haven't called it that. Most Lutherans haven't called it that, but it's been something I think that's been there in our tradition.
But your conclusion has been that maybe there isn't a particular Lutheran spirituality.
Oh, I think there is, because there is a particular, there's a particular faith perspective there, I think. Mm-hmm. But the particular, well, for instance, the emphasis upon the Eucharist, the primary emphasis upon the Word rather than sacrament, as being the kind of primary means of grace. That's something that we have in common with lots of Protestant traditions, I see. So I don't, maybe there is such a thing, but it doesn't seem to me that there is. I'm just thinking off the top of the head now. I suppose, I mean, Luther was the one who did really kind of re-emphasize, I guess, from Paul, this kind of daily baptismal and remembering one's baptism, that kind of dying and rising, making that a kind of spiritual practice, I suppose. Although it's one something, again, that's, I think, spread out and others have used it as well. So I don't know that, I think I agree with the Southern Seminary folks that we probably don't have any particular practice that marks us off as being different, but it's maybe the constellation of that tradition, that faith tradition within which those various practices are carried on. Yeah, Mark?
I would imagine that one of the places to start in terms of Lutheran reflection on spirituality would be a couple of the dangers that have been targeted here that are inherent in our tradition and that are surfacing right now for some reason, I don't know. One is what was mentioned over here, you get a certain content of the faith. You study the catechism, get confirmed, and that's very important, in Lutheran tradition in terms of its attributes, spirituality is heavily pedagogical. Our worship is heavily pedagogical. Martin Luther was a university professor. All the reformers were university professors. We talk, we preach, we use words. The purpose of the Lutheran liturgy has always been to teach the faithful what they should believe. But if in the process of that, those practices reduce the faith to simply a knowledge content, then we're in trouble. Because we've also always said that faith is not just knowing certain things. That's not the meaning of faith. So that's one danger that has to be constantly flagged in terms of our practices. The other is, how was it put? You can always be a loyal member, but need to find your spirituality someplace else. Can our practices more broadly? Well, the fellow said, be a loyal member.
To me, a loyal member just might mean that you show up every Sunday.
That's right. And if our practices are set in place, certain disciplines, like, say, again, the Sunday liturgy, that are used repeatedly and passed from one generation to the next, but the generations forget why the practices were put in place or how it was developed or why. And the only thing you talk about at church outside of the liturgy is the football game. Now you have coffee. It's quite possible that while that was fine for those who, for whom the discipline of Sunday morning was a meaningful one, if it becomes simply a rote thing for you, then you could possibly be a loyal member and need to find your spirituality elsewhere. Because to make the last connection to the lady who said what spirituality has to do with is simply doing whatever you're doing, being aware of God's presence with you. And whatever you do, as the woodcut relief says in the building, Interchurch Center next door to where I work, says, whatever you do, do to the glory of God. Spirituality is going through life with that sense of an awareness, whatever you're doing. And if that's lost, that can be lost even in Sunday morning liturgy practices.
Sure.
You know, so it's possible, yeah, you could be a loyal member. So it's the twin pitfalls, I think, of it, the pedagogical emphases and the perpetuation of disciplines that we forget why the disciplines are done. So that we forget that what we're doing in those disciplines is trying to remember God is with us. Mm-hmm. Those are the dangers that have to be flagged in Lutheran spirituality stuff today, I would think.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Those at least be two of them that would be important. And of course, they wouldn't be just today's problems, but they've been sort of perennial problems, I think, in Lutherans. Another would be, I think, the kind of cheap grace thing that has been a recurrent theme, where we've had people that have Johann Arndt and Søren Kierkegaard, Dietrich Bonhoeffer, kind of raising the cry against that sort of. So, at the end, what we'll do is we'll. I think this, like any other spiritual tradition of spirituality, is has certain strengths and certain weaknesses, and it's not. So often we've tried to argue that, this is the best or this is the right way. And I think that if it's one of the virtues, I think, of talking about spirituality is that you put things in a somewhat different key than it seems to me. Because that we can think of a Christian community that has diversity, that embraces diversity and needs diversity. And that those various members can have gifts. Each tradition perhaps has certain gifts, certain charisms, which it can offer to the whole, and also certain weaknesses. And no tradition has all the gifts. And so it's a matter, I think, of saying, what are those charisms? What are those special gifts that the Lutheran tradition has? But also be aware of, what are some of our real weaknesses to?
If you were using, I'd just be curious your own reflections, if we weren't saying within the Lutheran tradition, if we were saying within the Christian tradition and making a sort of an interfaith question, how might you respond to that?
The whole question about spirituality?
Yeah, like when you were saying within the Lutheran tradition, we can see that there are lots of other members of the orchestra that have instruments to bring.
Yes.
Within the interfaith tradition and saying, say within the Christian tradition, where would you kind of respond, or how would you go with that?
Oh, well, gee, I think there's all sorts of gifts. I mean, the Orthodox, gee whiz, the profound sense of the tangible, the sensual, the physical signs, you know, the icons is just part of that. But you go to a liturgy there, you often, you may have the incense and all of that, you see. And gee, for those of us who come from a Protestant tradition, and particularly those of us who are kind of at this upper end of the thing, we tend to shy away from that stuff. Boy, that can be really something for us, you see. Can say, hey, there's another way to reach people, another way to communicate the message. So, and I think you could go along the whole way. And each tradition has certain kind of gifts and certain limitations or weaknesses to it. Is that kind of what you were thinking?
I was thinking more, for instance, one time being at the Wailing Wall and experiencing that in the Jewish tradition as a very, as a Christian, but feeling very sacred in that spot. Mm-hmm. You know, in a largely Buddhist country not too long ago, and finding myself, my goodness.
So you're talking about interreligious, not just ecumenical.
I said interfaith, interreligious.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Yeah, and I guess.
Well, I think the Lutheran tradition has a considerable freedom there, that whereas there's this kind of core conviction about the gospel, which is very clearly rooted in Jesus Christ. Yet it seems to me, on the other hand, for various spiritual practices like such as yoga, that there's no reason why that couldn't be incorporated into that faith practice, you see. And then maybe that's just a beginning.
That's a little just.
Is that okay? Sure. Yeah. In fact, I would very much like to explore more of that along that vein of being able to talk to people who, in their own experience, have done that. But sometimes it's done for instance, one of the recent polls done of Presbyterians was that, and these were practicing, church-attending Presbyterians, I think it was something like 20% of them said they believed in reincarnation. Well, now, see, that's really hard to put together, what it seems to me, with the Christian convictions
but
about
sometimes it. Sometimes I find it difficult as a loyal member, I think, group. And uh-huh. what I was saying in our swamp group in a positive way, with having secret interest without pirating, like you said earlier, in a way that respects other religious traditions.
Yeah.
But what can we learn and embrace in an appropriate way?
Sure. Yeah. Sure. Okay. Well, I think we've gone past our time here.
Thanks.
Thank you very much. Yeah, we'll do it.